sky's so blue. With birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Mm, it's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls in just a moment, and the phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Already getting texts, Ton, because the days are getting longer, the sun is out, it's going to be close to 60 degrees today. Sounds like it's time to get out in the yard.
It really is. Starting Sunday, we have daylight savings time, and we're starting to see just lots of signs of spring. For a couple of weeks, we've had certain flowers. I've seen a lot of people posting hellebores are out, which is a little early, I think, but there's other bulbs already flowering, so it's really time to get going.
My crocus are all in full bloom, and they've just been beautiful for the last probably week and a half now. So, yeah, it's that time. But this morning, the plant of the week, the magnolia. Talk about magnolias. I always think of magnolias as growing somewhere in Greece or in the Mediterranean somewhere, but how do they do here in Utah?
A number of them do well. The magnolias are an interesting group. They're family, I guess. They're some of the oldest flowering plants in existence if you do the whole evolution thing. Mm-hmm. So they were around when the dinosaurs were. And there are species that grow anywhere from the tropics down to areas like Cache Valley, just depending on the particular species. And so we're accustomed to, like you said, Mediterranean climate, magnolias, the southern magnolia down through our south. But there's a whole range of cold hardy magnolia that will start blooming usually sometime in late March to early April, that are quite beautiful, that are cold hardy, and they do well here.
Okay, so what conditions do those that do well here like?
They want to be in a protected area, but sunny. So somewhere out of the wind is the main thing, maybe on a slope, so that cold air drains away. And then they also would like to have soil that's not super clay. The one, it's not really a drawback, but sometimes if your soil has too much clay or they're overwatered, they can be prone to iron chlorosis. Not always, but they can be. But otherwise, you know, they bloom for about 2 to 3 weeks in the spring, but then they just kind of turn into a large bush or a small tree, and they pop out and show their true colors again, their beautiful colors the next spring.
Right. Let's talk about the size for just a minute, because I usually think of them as being a bush, but one that you've posted in the on the Facebook page, it's a tree.
It is. And they can be trained into a tree. And the one in the picture is probably 20 or 25 years old.
Okay.
And it's been trained up like that. Most of the magnolias we would grow here are going to want to be a large bush, but you can easily train them into a 15 to 20 foot tall tree, and you just prune them up a little bit every year so that you can develop the trunks on it. It's going to be a, you know, multi-trunk tree, and then you just can let it go from there once you start to train it.
You mentioned that they like the water to drain away. Are they a more water-wise plant?
Not necessarily. They just don't tolerate waterlogged soil. They will need, on average, to be watered to a depth of 18 inches every 7 to 10 days through especially the peak growing season through July and August. And
okay, so they're not big water consumers.
No, they're not. You know, they're not swampy, swamp-loving plants or anything in that vein of thought, but they are not also going to be out there with your junipers and mountain mahoganies just surviving on rainwater.
Anything else they need to do their best? Do they need any sort of fertilization or?
just if they are not growing well, they're naturally slow growers. And so if you get a foot a year out of them, that is fine. But if they're not doing that and you know they're relatively healthy, some fertilizer in the spring will speed them along a bit. You know, I think one thing I want people to be aware of is the fact sheet we posted was the best I can find.
Oh.
But if you can Google cold hardy magnolias, there is so much variety out there. As far as, you know, there are a lot of pink ones. The two that you usually see here are called star magnolia and saucer magnolia. The saucer is the one that looks kind of like a tulip flower, but there are dozens of hybrids. And I just went through this morning before the program started and got a list of ones that are commonly available locally. And so there's Betty Jane, Royal Star, which I've mentioned. Betty and Jane are shades of pink. Oyama is one native to Japan. Dr. Merrill, Anne, Saucer, Butterflies. That one is kind of a creamy yellow. But then if you want to be a little adventurous, there are a few evergreen magnolia, like you're used to seeing in California or Greece or in the South.
Right.
So Edith Bogue and Kay Paris are two relatively hardy magnolia that are still going to need some protection, but you actually see them around the Wasatch Front here and there doing fine. And then some are growing another species called Sweet Bay Magnolia, which is evergreen in the South, but semi-evergreen in colder areas, but it's hardy down to at least 0 to -5 or so.
I'm noticing in this article, it doesn't say anything about fragrance.
A lot of them are fragrant. And I wish I had a better article. This one that I posted is just a bit dated, but it does bring up a lot of the species. But especially the tulip magnolia and some of the hybrids have a really nice scent to them also.
Yeah, I always think of them being white. So it's interesting to know that there are some pinks.
Oh, there's some. If we maybe on the break, I can show you some pictures, but they get into fuchsia pink and a fairly deep pink, and they're quite beautiful.
All right. And this morning, the plant of the week, the magnolia. You can find out more about it on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take your calls up next and your text questions. John and Dorothy are already on the line. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255, or you can text us your questions at 57500. First listener this morning to text in, Ton, said they planted a bunch of crocus in their lawn to naturalize it, and they're wondering if putting the IFA crabgrass preventer and lawn food on the lawn this spring is going to hurt them.
It should not. If they do it at the right time of year in mid to late April to May, the crocus will still be green, but it will have done its thing. And since crocus is what we would call a monocot, the lawn weed killers don't usually go after monocot. So grass is a monocot also.
Mm-hmm. So how is that going to naturalize their lawn? Maybe I'm a little confused.
Well, it's not that it's making the lawn more natural. They're letting the bulbs naturalize in the lawn. And they may be going for more of a prairie to where they will have spring bulbs. Like we talked about fritillaria mm-hmm. last week. There are species of fritillaria that only get 6 inches tall that grow in more of a dry prairie situation or a prairie situation. And so they may be going for something to where they have a mix of grasses with perennials. In a wild sense, we'd call them forbs. And so that you would have something blooming in the grasses most of the summer.
Okay, just a different look.
It is. And it's one you have to get used to. A lot of HOAs fine people for doing that because
my crocus are moving
look,
into the lawn whether I like it or not. They've just been there for so many
and
years.
And it's not a bad thing. Mowing them will keep them in check a bit, just slow their spread a bit. But the prairie look is slowly gaining traction, especially in the foothills. The lawns are something that you may only water every 3 or 4 weeks because the grasses you're using and the things in there will tolerate that. And so it is a lot more, and I hate throwing around the term sustainable, but it is something that will reduce water use by at least 50%, maybe 70%.
Okay.
Depending on the species. And so, but they also could just be letting them go in the lawn because they look pretty and their mowing is normal.
All right. John is on the line in Sandy. Good morning, John. What was your question?
Good morning. First of all, I really enjoy your program. I'm a longtime listener.
Thank you.
I have some ivy on the north side of my house, and it's about thigh high. Every couple of months, I pull it away from the brick so it won't attach, but I've never pruned it. And I was just wondering, what's the best way to prune that, and if pruning will spur growth?
Pruning always spurs growth in the spring. And so if you go in there and cut it back, it will just start to grow back no matter. It's kind of like, okay, a zombie plague that you kind of knock them back, but they never stop.
What percentage would you cut off?
Like, you know, if it's just too tall, and you could go in and give it a haircut almost to the ground and it would regenerate.
Okay, great.
Yeah, if you wanted to do that, that would be fine. And it would take a year or two, but it would regenerate.
It's tough to get rid of. It grows back so quickly. Honestly, John,
it does.
I've been trying to get rid of it in one area. You bet. Thanks for your call.
Outside of Utah and the Intermountain West, English ivy, the Hedra helix is the Latin name, has been declared noxious, and it's illegal to grow in many states.
It's so beautiful, but seriously, after a few years, it really is aggressive.
It is, and even here, I don't know that I would want to see it totally banned, but it does so much damage to buildings, and it can climb in trees. And so if you're going to grow it, I would consider getting it into an isolated area, maybe surrounded by cement, growing on a trellis or something to where you can contain it and keep other large structures away from it.
All right. Next texter is asking about slow composting. They want to know if they can dig kitchen organic waste into their garden even after the garden is planted and growing.
Yeah, they can. They just need a distance away from the plants themselves. And so you just go out into your garden and maybe in the back of it to where you have an extra few feet and just dig a trench about a foot deep. And what you will do is slowly fill that up with your food. And then as you fill up an area and you get 3 or 4 inches or 5 inches in there, just cover it back over with soil. And it's just called slow composting. You should work your way down the trench.
All right. Dorothy is on the line in Holiday. Good morning, Dorothy. What was your question this morning?
I need to replace a messy crabapple tree. It's about 4 feet from the sidewalk and driveway, east exposure. I did have a maple in there about 10 years ago, died of verticillium wilt, but I'm ready to get rid of this crabapple.
Would you want to replace it with another crabapple that was clean?
Well, do they have some that are clean?
Many, many, yeah.
Many.
Yes. You have an old-fashioned variety, like maybe Floribunda.
No,
or...
I actually have persistent fruit, but I can't remember the name of it. But, oh, my goodness, with that wind last week, it just blew. What a mess.
I mean, they're not going to survive a 90-mile-an-hour wind, but if you planted one with persistent fruit, let me give you a couple that are fruitless. Because if the crabapple's done well there, you could replace it. But you could look at one called Spring Snow. And it's really common. You should be able to find it this spring, and it will grow 18 inches a year. Fill in nicely.
What was that one?
Spring snow.
Oh, spring snow. Okay.
Yes. Then another that is fruitless out there is called Mara Lee. And it's, I think, M-A-R-I-L-E-E. Mara Lee, maybe. So,
no.
Yeah, those are two fruitless varieties that you could try.
Okay, and you wouldn't put up hot wings in because of verticillium wilt, or are they messy?
My definition of a messy is a little different than yours, and so I wouldn't hesitate to put a hot wings maple in, but if you want absolutely no seed, no fruit, you're stuck with spring snow crab apple or Marley.
Okay. Marley, okay.
Yeah.
All right. One other just quick question. Pruning of the shrub roses. Do I do renewal on them or just top? They're old. I don't think
if you can
ever
do renewal, I mean, it takes a brave person to dive in there. But renewal pruning is great for them because it brings the size down. Do they only bloom in the spring?
Yes.
Wait till they're done blooming, and then as soon as they're done, do your renewal pruning, and that will generate a lot more flowers for the next year.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Dorothy, thanks for your question this morning. Next sister wants to know, can they prune their roses now or should they wait later in the month?
Oh, they can do it.
You're going to let them do it.
Yeah, you can pull the pruners out.
All right. Charlie is on the line in Ogden. Good morning, Charlie. What was your question this morning?
Last week, you spoke with a fellow on the phone about the bumps in his lawn. And I was wondering what your thoughts were about top dressing a lawn to get rid of the bumps, level out my grass.
Well, if it's just that your lawn has become clumpy and it's only grasses, that can be a good thing. What I would do is heavily aerate and then put probably 2 or 3 pounds of grass seed per 1,000 square feet and water it in thoroughly. And over a year or two, as those grasses fill in, it may help. But it's always better to do that than to scalp it down to the crowns if you can avoid it.
Okay. Appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
All right, Charlie. Thanks for your call this morning. Next person, Ton, would like you to please repeat the USU website for dates and info regarding fruit tree spraying.
So we're just going to use the Google and just search USU Pest Lab Update Subscription. It'll bring it right up. And just subscribe. You've got your choice of vegetables, fruits, ornamentals, and lawns. Just choose the ones you want, and that's it.
Okay. Let's see. Our next listener is asking, is it a good day to prune peaches, or should they wait?
Tuesdays are the best day to prune peaches.
Tuesdays?
Yes.
No, you're being silly, I know.
It's fine. Yeah,
today's
go ahead.
A good day.
Yes.
Nobody can prune on Tuesday. Well, retired people with flexible schedules are the only ones that can prune on Tuesday. Is it a good time to prune burning bushes?
Yes, that's fine too.
Okay, and the burning bushes, you want to do the renewal pruning.
Renewal pruning, bringing their size down. They will tolerate hedging quite well. Mm-hmm. But if you can use renewal pruning and then give them a light haircut, that keeps them a lot healthier. I would also, in a couple of weeks, consider fertilizing the burning bush with some triple 16, and because they are susceptible to several root rot diseases, but fertilizing keeps them away.
Okay, final question before the break. Would a flowering cherry be vulnerable to the peach tree borer like the sweet cherries?
Not as much, but they are, yes.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open. You can also text us your questions at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Our next listener, Ton, is asking, they say they started their onions from seed. Now what? Do they harden them off before they plant them in the garden? And do they have to wait for the soil to warm up?
They want the soil to warm up a bit. And so I would continue to grow them. It's too early for them to go out, and I would wait until late March and mid-April at least before putting them outside.
Okay, next listener is asking about maintenance on a 3-year-old Japanese maple. Do they trim it, fertilize it? What do they do with it?
As hands-off as possible. The more you trim it, the more susceptible it becomes to internal rot diseases and vascular wilt diseases. And so in certain species of maple, there are they're just super susceptible to verticillium and a few other things. Mm-hmm. And so the first few years, you kind of get them trained where you want them and make sure and give them the space they need. And then you just hopefully you're able to just let them grow. Now, if it's a branch here or there so that you can walk past it, you know, or under it or whatever, but it's just as minimal as possible.
Next person would like to know how to care for the fire poker plant. Should they cut off old leaves, and how can they get them to maybe flower more fully?
They're just going to flower how they flower. I would deadhead them as soon as you see those flowers are spent. Take them off, but they over time get big by big, and you know it's 3 or 4 feet wide, and they bloom quite a bit. You're not going to extend their season out, but the bigger they get, the more they bloom. The other thing you can do is, you know, besides deadheading, is that if they get too big, you can go in and just do a big pruning on them, a fairly destructive pruning to where you just cut them way back.
And cut them back.
Yes.
They can get pretty large.
And they will regrow, but you can also split them. But when people see these cute little dainty red hot pokers, they don't realize how big they're going to be. Now, there are some newer varieties that stay about half the size. And so if you look at perennial catalogs, I encourage people to look up Perennial Favorites. They're a local distributor to most of our garden centers of perennials. They have a fantastic catalog listing what they're selling plus the sizes. And most of what they sell grows well here. And because they sell to everybody, I feel comfortable recommending their website and their catalog just so that you can find, if you want red hot poker but need one a little bit more diminutive, then I would look at their catalog to find the variety.
Scott is on the line in Mapleton. Good morning, Scott. What was your question?
Hello, good morning. I've got two questions. The first is I've got a good amount of space. I'm looking for a good variety of elm to plant. Do you guys have any suggestions? I know there's a lot out there when it comes to elm.
You know, the hybrid elms are a number of them that are pretty good. I believe Frontier is one of them. You know, the person I would email is J.D. Gunnell up in Cache County. And if you, I know you're driving, and so if you just look up on the internet, Cache County, USU Cache County Extension, it will bring up his email. And he has grown these for a number of years, and he has some that get 35 or 40 tall, some that get 60 tall. But the problem with some of the elms is that they go dormant quite late and they can take some winter damage, and some of them don't. And JD lives in a colder area of Cache Valley and has the good experience with them. And so I would shoot him an email and he can tell you 3 or 4 that would be fantastic.
Okay. The second question is I'm looking for some edibles to add to my landscaping and wondered about your opinion on the dwarf mulberry.
You know, if you're going to pick it, they're fine. It's a bird magnet. They like to come in and eat the mulberries. But I grew up with my mom. I believe she turned them into jelly, and she cooked with them a little bit when I was younger, and they're delicious. So, you know, you definitely could. But just put it in an area that, because you're going to have birds, you don't want it over a sidewalk or a driveway or a patio.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
All right, Scott, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, when can they cut back their roses and how close to the ground should they cut them?
Okay, you don't want to cut them shorter than knee height. And you want, depending on their age, you cut them back to 3 to 5 main canes.
Okay, also, what can they do about bindweed that's sneaking up through their lawn?
Strengthen the lawn through good management practices. More fertilizer isn't always better, but make sure you're aerating, make sure that you're deep watering, and the important times to fertilize are in the spring and then again in September and then again in early November. So do those things, and then I would suggest using a product called Image All-in-One Lawn Weed Killer. It has a herbicide in it called quinclorac that it's effective against a few things, but it's especially effective against bindweed. And so that's the route I would take.
Next listener would like to know, what is this very small, light, white, snow-like fuzz that they found on the outside of some of their grapevines?
It could be hard water scale. It could be a fungus that's just there. It could be a lot of different things. What I'm going to have them do is maybe send some pictures to our Facebook page so I can get a better idea.
On Messenger.
On Messenger.
Okay. Next listener says, or asks, are all of the David Austin roses wonderful, or do you have a favorite variety of David Austin roses?
They are something I haven't dived into for 5 or 10 years because there's been a lot of new introductions, but they're bred to look like heirloom, like Portland or Orleans roses, the big old roses that are fragrant, but they repeat bloom, they're hardy, and they're fairly disease resistant. And so it's more sentimental to me than saying, oh, this is a great variety, but my grandma's name was Evelyn. Mm-hmm. And I think their rose is actually Evelyn, but it's spelled about the same. And so just because of my grandma, I like the Evelyn, but there's
no other reason. Most of them are great.
They are. And so what I would do is the Utah Rose Society has an excellent Facebook page with people that this is just what they live, eat, and breathe. Mm-hmm. And so I would join the Utah Rose Society on Facebook and ask, what are your favorite David Austin roses? Why? What size? You know, and I would do that. And I'm going to defer to them because there are several people on that are just so knowledgeable about these David Austin roses.
Yeah, we should see if somebody would like to come on and talk
to us.
Yeah,
that'd be fabulous.
Great. All right. If you know someone, text us. We'll get their phone number and put them on. Darren is on the line in South Jordan. Good morning, Darren. What was your question this morning?
Hi. I was considering getting a multi-graft cherry tree because of not having space to do two for cross-pollinization. I was wondering, how would you prune those? Because I think normally you do a modified leader. I don't know if you can still do that with a multi-graft, or what would you do?
With this one, you're probably going to have to use an open center just to keep the stems separate. And it's not evil to do to a sweet cherry. It's not the preferred method, but it is fine to do. And you would want to put some flagging tape on the branches, and you're going to change it every year because you don't want to girdle the branches. But you've absolutely got to keep track of where your varieties are so you don't accidentally prune one out. And so just put something in there and a map of the tree so you know where the varieties are.
Okay. And then just kind of try and keep the center more open for airflow. And
correct.
And
because the varieties, if you do 2 or 3 or 4 varieties, are going to have to be developed into main side branches with an open middle so that you can keep them separate.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning. We're going to take a break, come back with more of your questions and calls. Bruce, you will be up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Next person would like to know, Ton, when do they start their weekly treatments of the Captain Jacks for peach tree borer?
Early June.
Okay. You still have a few weeks left. Relax.
You do, but then you'll need to spray it weekly.
Okay. It sounds like they know that.
Yeah, through mid-September, so.
Okay. Bruce is on the line from Alpine. Good morning, Bruce. What was your question?
Yes, good morning, my friends. Hey, we sure love your program.
Well, thank you.
We're even angry when BYU sports interferes with it.
So are we, but okay.
I don't know that we ever could, but I've thought about, do we just go to a digital feed if people want to log on? But
right.
We don't fool with BYU sports.
Nope.
Well, you sure miss you when you have to. Hey, listen, I'm calling this morning. We have had a beautiful Japanese maple just outside of our entry door, just in a little garden area. And it's just done so well for probably going on about 15 years. This past year, it didn't lose all of its leaves before snowfall occurred. And during one of the heavier storms, several of the large branches in the middle of the tree snapped off about 2/3 of the way up the tree. And I've since, you know, cut them out for fear of doing additional damage. And as I look at the tree now for the coming spring, I'm wondering, how do I, in the most healthy way, bring that Japanese maple back into some kind of symmetric shape, or how much can I cut it back without doing damage?
I would let it leaf out and see what's alive, and before you do a lot more cutting. And where you can, to bring it back into balance, you're going to follow the branches back to a branch intersection and cut them at a branch intersection where you have another branch that kind of shoots off, you know, on a different angle, if you can.
Okay.
But you prune as minimally as you can, because it seems like heavy pruning when the maples are more established can make, yes, it can make them more susceptible to vascular wilt diseases. And so if you have to, you have to, but, and they don't always get them, but it just increases the susceptibility.
That's okay. I'll certainly follow that counsel. Traditionally in a, with an ornamental maple like that, do you, you know, I've been careful over the years to shape it very carefully and slowly, but do you open up the center in a Japanese maple like that, or generally do you avoid doing that?
I just leave them alone and okay, let them grow. You know, when they're younger, you can train them so that you can get a canopy established, but I just work yeah, with what is there. And I, the things I look for, there's the three D's to pruning, and the first D is dead branches, the second D is diseased, and then the third D are dumb branches. And on the dumb branches, they're talking about crossing branches, branches that are going straight up, ruining the look of the tree, branches that are going down toward the ground. And so once you take care of those, then you just leave it alone. And I wouldn't cut more than about 15 to 20. Now, this year is an exception, but generally never more than 10 or 15% of that canopy comes out, especially no more than 20.
Boy, I really appreciate that counsel. It's more my personality to cut.
So doesn't it give you a sense of accomplishment? I was over at Conservation Garden Park with JD last week, and we were talking about pruning fruit trees and grapes and things, and they had a fruit tree that you just get busy, and it hadn't been pruned in a couple of years, and we did a number on it, just bringing it back and checking. And there's just something satisfactory about just being looking at seeing, not only just I did that, but it just looks like it should.
Well, I'm going to test my patience, and I really appreciate your counsel and insight.
All right, Bruce, thanks so much for calling this morning. I really like that. Dead, diseased, or dumb branches are the ones.
Correct.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
All right.
Hey, thanks so
Bruce.
Much, guys.
Next listener, Ton, is wondering about, they say they've missed pruning apples and pears, and is it better to still prune now or wait until next year?
I would get them pruned as soon as they can.
Okay. Not going to hurt them.
No.
All right. Next person wants to know, when do they apply the dormant oil to their peach trees?
Dormant oil is still a few weeks out. Subscribe to the OSU Pest Lab. They will tell you the day you need to spray. The other thing they can do is to download the Home Orchard Pest Management Guide from USU. Look at the pictures, because they'll show you the bud stages, and they will show you the bud stage when you should spray. And so there isn't a calendar date. You know, you can't just say March 20th of every year, because our weather varies and the progression of the buds varies. And so you need to look at the pictures and subscribe to the OSU Pest Lab, and Mayor Murray will tell you the day you need to do it.
I love that.
And when I say, you know, I jokingly, oh, Tuesdays are the best day to prune peaches, they actually do that and say, oh, you know, March 23rd is your day.
Okay. A next listener says they put a lot of leaves in their garden in the fall. Should they apply nitrogen to the garden this spring, or what should they do?
When they can work the soil, I would lightly work them into the soil so that they're at least partially covered. And then if there's still too many of them, yeah, they could put some nitrogen down now and then work them in a little bit and just see if that speeds up their decomposition. If there's still some fragments around and they're 75% gone, I would just follow USU's fact sheets on fertilization to ensure that the vegetables have enough nitrogen, but it's not the end of the world.
On a day like today, it's going to be tough to stay inside. It is just going to be so beautiful with the high near 60 degrees. What do you want people to avoid doing today when they go out in their yards?
I would want them to avoid going crazy on the soil, because if the soil is still frozen or too wet, you can do a lot of damage. And so how to know if your soil is of the right consistency as far as water moisture, get a shovel out, and if you can easily put it into the soil, it's probably not frozen. And then if you turn the soil, so you dig it up, lift it, try to dump it, if your soil is sticking to your shovel almost like a paste. Mm-hmm. It's too wet and you need to wait another couple of weeks. Now, if we don't get rain for the next 2 or 3 days and a lot of that water drains off and the continued warm weather in the next week to 10 days, we're going to be able to work the soil.
You mentioned that they can start pruning things like roses, but again, what do they need to be careful about pruning?
Download the fact sheets, look at the pruning videos on USU's web YouTube page, and make sure you know what you're doing. But it's going to be warm enough that the roses, trees, shrubs, it's fine to prune.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to talk about planting cool season vegetables. That's what we should be planting right now?
It is. And so on these cool season vegetables, we have a great fact sheet showing the number of days that you need to wait before frost, before planting outside, whether you're doing starts or seeds.
Mm-hmm. So we've heard from people who are planting onions and things. What is our, are we already past the time for peas?
You can put them in any time. The peas will just come up when the soil is warm enough. And as long as they're up on a hill so that they don't have excess water rotting them, and you can protect them from birds, that's the other thing, that the birds will sometimes dig them up. But you can plant peas actually in November, and they'll just come up in the spring.
Okay, what about those tulip bulbs that I got for Valentine's Day? Can they be planted outside now?
You can try and see what they do.
Depending on the soil, too. And yeah. You're not promising anything?
Promising anything.
Okay.
Mike's a little bit more pessimistic than I am about such things, but I would put them in the ground. At least put them in an area that you can space them every 3 or 4 inches, and if they come up, you can then lift them in the fall and move them where you want them. But if they don't come up, you haven't expended too much effort by spreading them all over, hoping that they're going to bloom.
My problem is I forget where I've planted things. That's the biggest problem. We're going to come back with more of your calls and questions and talk about cool season vegetables. The number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.